This is Frank Bergholzer, NBC News. This has been a busy and not a very funny day. Soviet Premier Khrushchev attacked the United Nations, attacked Secretary General Hammarskjöld, the United States, and President Eisenhower. President Nkrumah of Ghana called for an all-African force in the Congo, joined Khrushchev in a demand for immediate independence for every area in the world that doesn't already have it. Secretary of State Herter said the Russians had declared war on the United Nations. Ambassador Wadsworth said the UN would fail unless it met this crisis head-on. President Nasser of the Arab Republic arrived. Khrushchev and Fidel Castro got together for dinner. President Eisenhower returned to Washington. The UN Steering Committee argued over the agenda. Our purpose is to cover these stories and the late developments.
This is another NBC special report, designed for more complete coverage of the breaking news. Tonight, the General Assembly, with speeches by Ghana's Nkrumah and Russia's Khrushchev, and the latest developments at the United Nations. Now, NBC News correspondent Frank Bergholzer.
All week, Nikita Khrushchev has sat impatiently in the chief delegate chair of the Soviet Union in the General Assembly of the United Nations. He's listened to speaker after speaker, including yesterday his most prominent personal enemy, President Eisenhower. Today he listened to one more speech, that of President Kwame Nkrumah of Ghana, and then UN President Frederick Boland introduced him, Nikita Khrushchev, as the next speaker. He spoke for 2 hours and 20 minutes to the General Assembly. His speaking ranged from ad-lib jokes about the Russian drinking water he brought with him to ad-lib flights into hysteria about how communists were the only hope in the world in the world's struggle for freedom and independence. His heaviest punch, however, was delivered against the United Nations Secretariat.
In brief, we consider it expedient to set up, instead of the Secretary General, who is at present the interpreter and executor of the Assembly and Security Council decisions, to set up instead of him a collective executive body of the United Nations comprising three persons, each of whom would represent a certain group of states. A definite guarantee would thereby be created that the work of the United Nations executive would not be conducted to the detriment of any one of these groups of states. Then the United Nations executive will really be a democratic body. It will really safeguard the interests of all United Nations member states, irrespective of the social and political systems of the various states making up the United Nations. This is particularly necessary at the present time, and all the more so in the future.
After the Khrushchev speech, and we'll come back to it presently for its other points, American Secretary of State Herter hurried to a luncheon meeting of the Foreign Press Association in New York, there to deliver the first important American reaction to Mr. Khrushchev's remarks. This was the Secretary's overall evaluation.
However, I do want to give you one or two very quick reactions. One is that it was an all-out attack, a real declaration of war against the structure, the personnel, and the location of the United Nations.
Later in the afternoon, U.S. Ambassador James Wadsworth exercised his right to reply to the Soviet attacks in the General Assembly itself.
From the head of the Soviet state himself, against the office of the Secretary General. The Soviet Union has sought to crush another Secretary General, Mr. Trygve Lie, because he stood up against communist aggression in Korea. It is now attempting to crush the very office of the Secretary General itself, in keeping with the philosophy of what we might term what we cannot control, we will destroy. The United Nations, Mr. President, must face this crisis head on. If it does not, it will fail.
Other delegations, the British in particular, echoed the American reaction, but the most profound hurt was felt by the professionals of the United Nations Secretariat. We have that story now from NBC's United Nations correspondent, Pauline Frederick.
The United Nations tonight is facing its greatest crisis of survival. UN sources admit privately that Soviet Premier Khrushchev's attack today on the office of the Secretary General is a long-range gamble to destroy the world organization. Khrushchev, acting out of anger and frustration over the UN operation of Secretary General Hammarskjöld, which prevented the communizing of the Congo, has apparently decided the UN is expendable. But he would destroy it wearing a mask as the UN's great defender. Khrushchev would amend the charter to turn the office of Secretary General into a presidium of three, one representing the Warsaw Pact, one NATO, and one the neutrals. Of course, they would veto one another and everything the UN tried to do, and so the bear would be free to prowl the world at will. One man who will not talk here tonight understands as clearly as anyone what the Russian is about, Dag Hammarskjöld. Calm in public as well as in private, after this shocking day, Secretary General is sitting back to let the General Assembly decide the future of the United Nations. He knows that this crisis goes far beyond the Soviet harassment of his predecessor, Trygve Lie, who was forced to resign because he sided with the West in the Korean crisis. Hammarskjöld understands that this is a test not of the fortunes of an individual, but of the very existence of the United Nations itself. And so do many of the delegates. American delegate Wadsworth was speaking for them tonight when he stalked to the podium and said in measured tones that carried to every corner of the hall, "The United Nations, Mr. President, must face this crisis head on. If it does not, it will fail." This is Pauline Frederick, NBC News at the United Nations.
Nikita Khrushchev had still more to say in his 2 hours plus. Colonialism was the theme that he used to carry much of his aggressive approach. It was the vehicle for his attack on Hammarskjöld, and in a deeper sense, the vehicle of his appeal for support of the entire uncommitted world.
When the colonialists realized that the government of the Republic of the Congo, which was legally elected and enjoyed the confidence of the parliament, had embarked upon the path of a firm, independent policy, and set it for itself the task of working for the interest of the Congolese people only, every means was employed by the colonialists to bring down this government. The colonialists decided to get a puppet government created, which, posing as an independent government, would in fact be obedient to the will of the colonizers. The colonialists tried to bring this about by crude methods and direct interference, as they have always done so in the past. Unfortunately, in the case of the Congo, they have been doing this unseemly work through the United Nations Secretary General, Mr. Hammarskjöld, and his staff. This is shameful. The United Nations forces, which were sent at the request of the legal government to help that government, have taken over the airports and the radio station, disorganized the life of the state, and paralyzed the activities of the legitimate government. The UN troops created conditions for the treacherous acts of the Katanga puppet, where forces were rallied and mobilized against the government of Patrice Lumumba, which was elected in conformity with all the rules of democratic procedure. The colonialists and their servitors say that Lumumba is a communist. Lumumba is certainly no communist, but he is a patriot of his country and honestly serves his own people in its struggle for liberation from the colonial yoke of society. The Soviet government believes that the time has come to raise the question of the complete and final elimination of the colonial regime of administration in all its forms and shapes, so as to do away with this shame, this barbarism and savagery. Not all. When I was preparing my statement and was getting ready to speak, I knew that not all would welcome these proposals, because along with free people, we have here representatives of colonial powers, and they are hardly likely to welcome our freedom-loving proposals.
Thank you.
Firmly adhering to the principle that the United Nations is the center for coordinating the actions of nations in achieving the universal aims proclaimed in its charter, the Soviet government submits for consideration by this session of the General Assembly a draft declaration in which the following demands are solemnly proclaimed. 1. To grant immediately to all colonial countries, trusteeship territories, and other non-self-governing territories complete independence and freedom in the building up of their own national states in conformity with the freely expressed will and desire of their peoples. The colonial regime, colonial administration in all its forms, should be abolished completely so as to make it possible for the peoples of such territories to determine their destiny and form of government. 2. To eliminate likewise all strongholds of colonialism in the shape of possessions and leasehold areas on the territories of other states. 3. The governments of all countries are called upon to observe strictly and consistently the provisions of the United Nations Charter and of this declaration relating to the equality and respect for sovereign rights and territorial integrity of all states without exception, allowing no manifestations of colonialism, no exclusive rights or advantages for some states to the prejudice of other states.
Many had wondered how nasty Khrushchev would be toward the United States, whether he would try to fashion an olive branch and extend it to President Eisenhower, whether he would make a strong appeal for a return to the spirit of negotiation which had prevailed when last he was here in this country, or whether he would continue to use the President and the United States as the arch villains in his propaganda design for Soviet leadership. The answer came clearly enough when Khrushchev turned his attention to the U-2 and the RB-47 events.
We believe that a special importance has been acquired by the question of the aggressive actions of the United States against the Soviet Union, which found their expression in the dispatch of American planes into Soviet airspace. This in itself is a fact which goes beyond the limits of the relations between states admissible in time of peace. But this question assumes particular importance, moreover, for the reason that the President of the United States, Mr. Eisenhower, himself declared the aggressive flights of the American planes a normal business allegedly necessary for the security of the United States. At the same time, the United States government arbitrarily assumed the right to send such planes in the future as well. This is why, since the matter concerns the violation of the sovereign rights not only of the Soviet Union but of other states as well, the question of the aggressive actions of the United States must be dealt with by the United Nations organization at its plenary session. The continuation of such actions, and especially their interpretation by the President of the United States as state policy, can at any moment plunge mankind into a third world war. Therefore, I repeat, it is the opinion of the Soviet government that this question, as well as the question of disarmament and the elimination of colonialism, must be discussed at the plenary session of the United Nations General Assembly and not in the committees.
All these things, Khrushchev said, and more besides. NBC's senior European correspondent Joseph C. Harsh was there. We turn to him now for a summation of Khrushchev's day at the United Nations.
It was indeed Khrushchev Day here at the UN, Frank, and the most accurate summary, I think, is that he opened a new battle on a new field in the Cold War. The UN had become an independent force in the world. It had frustrated communist purposes in the Congo. Mr. Khrushchev turned upon the UN today in an obvious and a declared attempt to destroy it as a force capable ever again of thwarting his purposes. It was a bitterly disappointing day to those who had hoped from the opening Khrushchev remarks on arrival that he might have come here seeking a reconciliation from the fiasco of the summit in Paris. There were some hopes of that still this morning. There are few left here tonight. And not after he launched his offensive against the UN. We know now that if we want to keep the UN alive, we must accept this battle and contest the issue with all our skill and with all our energy. But that this means a greater danger of real war is, however, another matter. Khrushchev opened one new battle, but only one, and he left the other old ones about as they were. He touched briefly on Berlin in his speech, but said nothing new. He bored the veteran members of the assembly to distraction with his dreary repetitions of communist cliches on so-called colonialism. He sounded as usual on coexistence. He had a passage on disarmament, which changed nothing on that front. He said less than expected on the U-2 and the RB-47 incidents. It was the day of the great Khrushchev attack on the UN, but in the opinion of many Western diplomats, the real damage of the day lay not in what Khrushchev said, but what Nkrumah of Ghana did. We could face the Russians on the UN issue with confidence if we could count on most of the new African states to stand with us. The Nkrumah speech seemed to disclose a Russian political lodgment in a place where we and the British thought our position was reasonably strong. The Nkrumah speech was a harder and a more unexpected blow than the Khrushchev speech. This is Joseph C. Harsh of NBC News at the UN.
Nikita Khrushchev, we might say, was the voice of overriding power in today's performance, but Kwame Nkrumah of the new African nation of Ghana was a major personality in his own right, the first African chief of state to address a United Nations session, in a session which is clearly dominated this year by the African theme, and Nkrumah, too, carried the theme of colonialism.
For years and years, Africa has been the footstool of colonialism and imperialism, exploitation and degradation. From the north to the south, from the east to the west, her sons languished in chains of slavery and humiliation, and Africa's exploiters and self-appointed controllers of her destiny strode across the land with incredible inhumanity, without mercy, without shame, and without honor. But these days are gone, and gone forever. And now I, an African, stand before this august assembly of the United Nations and speak with the voice of peace and freedom, proclaiming to the world the dawn of a new era.
Nkrumah anticipated Khrushchev's call for total liberation, a call that Secretary Herter called a call for, it's an incitement to...
Must call upon all nations that have colonies in Africa to grant complete independence to the territories still under their control. In my view, possession of colonies is now quite incompatible with membership of the United Nations. This is a new day in Africa, and as I speak now, 13 new African nations have taken their seat this year in this August Assembly as independent sovereign states. The readiness of any people to assume responsibility for governing themselves can be determined only by themselves. I and the government of Ghana, and I'm sure the government and people of independent African states, share the joy of welcoming our sister states into the family of the United Nations. There are now 22 of us in this assembly, and there are yet more to come. I would suggest that when the Charter of the United Nations comes to be revised, a permanent seat should be created for Africa on the Security Council in view not only of the growing number of African members of the United Nations, but also of the increasing importance of the African continent in world affairs. This suggestion applies equally to Asia and to the Middle East.
There was also agreement with Khrushchev on the need for UN recognition of the legitimacy of Patrice Lumumba's government in the Congo.
Congo, as we all know, has been a Belgian colony for nearly a century. In all those years, Belgium applied a system of calculated political castration in the hope that it would be completely impossible for African nationalists to fight for their emancipation. But to the dismay of Belgium, and to the surprise of everyone outside the African continent, this dreaded nationalism appeared, and with the lightning space and time of time, secured the independence of the Congo. The responsibility for keeping the Cold War out of the Congo, and for that matter, out of Africa, rests equally on the United Nations. This responsibility, as far as the Congo is concerned, can only be discharged if the United Nations act promptly and realistically in the present situation there. It is impossible to ignore the realities of the continued Belgian intervention in the Congo in defiance of the Security Council resolution. Unless such intervention is promptly and effectively checked, and the private armies of all sorts now operating in the Congo eliminated by the United Nations, there will be no end to the chaos and confusion which now reigns in the new state. It is impossible for a saint to be neutral on the issue of good and evil, as it is for the United Nations to be neutral on the issue of legality and illegality. The United Nations must determine what is lawful and what is right, and then see that this is enforced. Otherwise, the United Nations will betray the principles which were proclaimed in the first resolution of the Security Council, on the basis of which the legitimate government invited them to enter the Congo Republic.
This performance by Nkrumah did not set at all well with American officials, as Secretary Herter disclosed in a burst of unusual candor during his press association appearance.
An all-out attack, a real declaration of war against the structure, the personnel, and the location of the United Nations.
Secretary Herter went on to say in his press association appearance that, in his view, Nkrumah was leaning very much toward the Soviet communist bloc. Another reaction to the fast-moving developments in the United Nations came this afternoon from Lord Hume, Britain's foreign secretary. He was interviewed by NBC's Martin Agronsky.
Well, my first reaction was to note the contrast between the president's speech, which he opened the Assembly General Debate, and Mr. Khrushchev's. Every word of the president's speech was constructive. Mr. Khrushchev, for a very large part of his speech, was really repeating the slogans we've heard often before, and I think he missed a wonderful opportunity, because he would have had a great response from the Assembly if he'd really taken up and followed up the president's opening offers.
And actually, there was no response whatsoever to anything that the president had proposed yesterday.
Nothing at all. And of course, the president was very wise. I mean, he identified, for instance, the real needs of the Africans. And the real needs of the African countries are for food, for education, for development. Now, Mr. Khrushchev...
Today's events also brought a continuation of the story which dominated attention earlier this week, the story of Khrushchev and Fidel Castro finding one another. Tonight, the two comrades are having dinner at Khrushchev's, where NBC correspondent Joseph Michaels is standing by.
Nikita Khrushchev and Fidel Castro should be just about up to their after-dinner cognac by now, and they've been eating their meal to the accompaniment of that. More pickets than we've had at any time since Nikita Khrushchev came here. I imagine they've joined forces. That is, I should have said they'd be up to their after-dinner cognac if they're still talking to one another. It was really a rather fantastic scene out here, with the head of one of the smallest nations in the world keeping the head of one of the largest nations in the world, certainly one of the two most powerful, waiting for an awfully long time. We didn't know that when Mr. Khrushchev came outside. We were all waiting to see what he was going to do. Strangely enough, he didn't seem to want to talk to us. We were wondering why he was standing around. Then we heard Mr. Castro was coming. What is more, we heard after we've been standing there for quite some time that Mr. Castro was already over 40 minutes late. The way it ended up, Khrushchev stood around outside with, as they say in the theatrical trade, egg on his face, while Mr. Castro just didn't come. In fact, he waited outside for 40 minutes. Mr. Castro was something like an hour and 10 minutes late. One story went that he was bringing a present, but that the chickens that they had for dinner had not yet been plucked up at the hotel where Mr. Castro was staying. At any rate, the reporters are waiting here now to see if they're going to come out again. Mr. Khrushchev goes off to Long Island for a day of rest in the country tomorrow. That's the story as it looks from here in front of the Soviet UN mission right at this very moment. This is Joseph Michaels, NBC News in New York.
A number of government chiefs still are expected here in New York for this Chiefs of Government United Nations meeting. Prime Ministers of India, Canada, and Great Britain, among them, Mr. Macmillan coming from London, is expected to see President Eisenhower here on Tuesday. He'll speak probably to the UN on Thursday. Greeted by a small but fervent group of supporters when he arrived in New York late this afternoon. Banner-waving Muslim groups as well as embassy and consular officials turned out to give him an unmarred welcome. Jewish organizations had announced prior to Nasser's arrival they would not demonstrate against the Egyptian ruler. Nasser went directly to the Long Island residence the UAR had rented for him. His immediate plans are undisclosed. Presumably he'll spend the weekend there on Long Island. We've heard that Nikita Khrushchev may spend his weekend on Long Island also. He has received permission to go out to Glen Cove, where the Russians have a dacha, as they call their weekend houses. We have some comparisons of how the two major powers, President Eisenhower speaking for the United States and Khrushchev speaking for the Soviet Union, referred to the United Nations. Mr. Eisenhower said on Thursday, "The United Nations has become the forum of all peoples. We must guard jealously against those," said the president, "who in alternating moods look upon the United Nations as an instrument for use and abuse." On Friday, Premier Khrushchev put it this way. "The United Nations," he said, "is useful and necessary. In the course of United Nations activities, however, some of its negative aspects also come to light. The executive machinery," said Khrushchev, "often approaches the solution of questions from the standpoint of a certain group of countries. Partiality, particularly manifested in the Congo, and as we've seen, Khrushchev went on to attack Secretary General Hammarskjöld and the institution of a single Secretary General in the United Nations, an institution which Mr. Khrushchev said he would like to change. The President had said on Thursday, "We should all support the United Nations response to emergency needs in the Congo," which the Secretary General, in the President's view, had used such skill in organizing. Well, the weekend coming up, as we say, is quiet. The United Nations has adjourned until Monday. There will be no formal sessions. And so Khrushchev may be spending the next 2 days out there on Long Island. What Fidel Castro will do on Saturday and Sunday in Harlem can only be conjectured. The United Nations itself will be quiet. There will be nothing to follow up with the latest action that we have word of. Hungary has been included on the UN agenda for the future meetings. This is a kind of pause in UN activities. With the issues now effectively joined by East and West, the statesmen have the opportunity for extracurricular contacts, which many feel are the most likely of all contacts to shape the actual results of such a gathering as this. Frank Bergholzer, NBC News.
You have just heard another special NBC News report on the historic 15th General Assembly of the United Nations. This broadcast has summed up the day's events both inside and outside the UN headquarters building on New York's east side. NBC Radio will continue to cover developments while this momentous conclave continues, as they occur and from the scene. During the weekend, Monitor and NBC News will maintain a constant vigil on this big story. And on Monday, if he appears on schedule, Cuba's fiery and unpredictable Prime Minister Castro will take the rostrum at the General Assembly. NBC News, through our hotline service, will broadcast the major portion of his address. Later in the week, British Prime Minister Harold Macmillan is scheduled to speak at the United Nations, and NBC Radio will broadcast that talk. And beginning next Thursday evening, NBC Radio will assess the domestic political situation from five regions of the nation as the start of a weekly countdown on the election. Stay tuned to your NBC station for news on the hour, rounding up all the news from around the world. This is the NBC Radio Network.